This is Company Cars, the podcast that tries to make sense of the car business. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Company Cars. It has been a while since we've had an episode. Things have gotten a little busy at work for me, and so the podcast kind of took a back seat to my normal day job. But I hope you enjoyed our four-part trip through the 1980s and 1990s discussing the Japanese luxury car business, because this episode we're going to take things a different direction, and we're going to fast forward to the present day, and we'll talk about something that's been in the news lately, specifically automobile fuel efficiency standards. In this episode, we'll also have an administrative update just on things in the car business and how it's going, and we'll also have an update on rental car roulette, lest you forget that that segment still exists. And so all that and more in this episode of Company Cars. And so what's going on in the car business? Well, lately, a couple big things have been capturing the headlines. So we have seen the chip shortage and supply chain related disruptions get even worse, with Honda and Toyota saying that they are cutting production between 30 and 40%. So this year, it's going to be a very strange winter car sale later in the year, since there won't be as many cars as we had last year. And there was actually a really good piece in Automotive News that said Lexus and Toyota had to make a decision on whether or not they still wanted to have Toyotathon and Lexus December to Remember, two of the most iconic winter car sales in the business. And the article talked about how the two OEMs decided to go for it, but they're going to be emphasizing a different message this year. So it'll be interesting to see what Lexus December to Remember looks like, and if we should be remembering this December as one where nobody could buy a car, or for other reasons. Also, since the last episode, we've seen Ford double down on electric pickup trucks, announcing a new assembly plant in Tennessee that'll build electric F-150s and other EV products, and a joint venture battery assembly plant. So Ford seems to be really all in on electric vehicles, which is always exciting to see, and ties to our episode on fuel efficiency standards. And so lots going on in the car business right now between the chip shortage and automakers continuing to pivot towards electric vehicles and away from internal combustion engines. Also, big news, just before this episode was taped, we got an announcement that Tesla is moving their global headquarters from Palo Alto out to Austin, Texas, where this podcast is based. So it'll be exciting to see Tesla in town as they build further on their presence and their assembly plant that exists in Austin today. And also, I said there would be an update on rental car roulette. So it's been a tough year for renting cars. If any of you out there have noticed, there's not enough rental cars because there aren't enough new cars to buy, and people have started traveling again in droves. So I've largely been avoiding the rental car scene, but I have made some rental car plans for the end of the month this month, and so perhaps in an episode or two, I will have a rental car roulette update for everybody. All right, so now diving into our episode today. So in the news recently, the United Nations put out a report about climate change and humans' contribution to climate change, and it's pretty dire. So it looks like the effects of climate change are becoming increasingly severe, and there's more that society needs to do to control its greenhouse gas emissions. At the same time, we also have some information about the Biden administration's efforts to adjust the mandatory fuel economy regulations for new cars in the U.S. So in the U.S., the Environmental Protection Agency regulates the average fuel economy that cars are supposed to get for cars that are sold in the U.S. And so the headlines say that the EPA is targeting an average fleet-wide average of 52 miles a gallon by 2026, which seems pretty dramatic for all of us out there who are driving cars that get 25, 30, 35 miles per gallon. If you ask somebody to make a list of the cars that currently get more than 40 miles a gallon, the list might not be terribly long. So this seems like a pretty daunting change in fuel economy. But in this episode, we'll explore the history of these standards in the U.S., how that 52 miles per gallon number is calculated for regulatory purposes, and why 52 miles per gallon by 2026 might not actually mean that you'll be driving 52 miles on each gallon of gas you drive in a brand new car in 2026. So to kick us off, let's talk about corporate average fuel economy standards, which are commonly referred to in the business as CAFE standards. And so these are rules that prescribe the average fuel economy each automaker must meet across its fleet of cars that it sells in the United States. So according to Wikipedia, the history of CAFE starts with the 1973-1974 Arab oil embargo, after which Congress decided the U.S. should drive more efficient vehicles to reduce our exposure to imported oil and reduce our fuel consumption. And so these standards, the idea was that they would force automakers to innovate and come up with new ways to reduce the amount of oil we consumed and reduce our dependence on foreign oil. So the EPA sets separate standards for passenger cars, like family sedans, sports cars, and station wagons, and for light trucks, which includes pickup trucks, sport utility vehicles, and vans. So the idea here is smaller cars, lower to the ground, should have different standards than larger cars that maybe farmers need to buy to transport their cattle to the market, or contractors need to buy to carry around their tools to repair homes. So they set two different standards, and to make it simple, they just had two categories, cars and trucks. But the interesting thing is the trucks category is quite broad, and so one thing to note here is that these classifications are partially a motivation for why we wound up with crossovers, which are SUVs that are designed on a car platform, which we discussed earlier in the podcast. And so even though crossovers have a lot of the feel of a car, they're classified as light trucks for fuel economy purposes. And so CAFE standards also exclude heavy-duty vehicles with a gross vehicle weight rating of 6,000 pounds or more. Later, this was up to 8,500 pounds. And so the idea here is that super heavy-duty equipment, we should just worry about that later, and those will be harder to make efficient anyway, so let's focus on the easy wins first. And gross vehicle weight rating here means the absolute maximum safe weight of your car, plus everything inside the car, and the tongue of any trailers attached to the car. And so to encourage companies to meet these targets that the EPA was going to set up, if companies could not meet the mandatory averages, they would have to pay fines to the EPA as a penalty. So these automakers have huge incentive to avoid the penalty, because these penalties are based not only on the gap that you have to the mandatory standard, but also it's a function of how many cars you sell. So most of the automakers are quite large, and so these penalties can be reasonably large. Also, these averages are computed separately for cars that are considered domestic and foreign. And to the EPA, domestic cars are defined as cars with more than 75% NAFTA content inside it, or content from the North American Free Trade Zone, which consists of Canada, the US, and Mexico. And foreign cars are considered everything that does not meet this domestic threshold. To further complicate factors, for trucks, the partition is different. It's not based on domestic versus foreign, but it's based on two-wheel drive trucks, four-wheel drive trucks, and a combined blended average. So there are five separate standards that automakers have to meet. They have to meet a domestic car standard, a foreign car standard, a two-wheel drive truck standard, a four-wheel drive truck standard, and a blended two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive average. However, in more recent years, after some reforms and shifts in how the EPA considers light trucks, one thing to note is in recent years, they now only compute a combined two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive average for trucks. So to sum it all up, right now automakers have three different standards to meet, one for domestic cars, one for foreign cars, and a blended two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive average for light trucks that's computed based on their sales mix of two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive products. Starting in 2011, the formula changed again, and now the corporate average fuel economy number is calculated based on the footprint of a vehicle. So the footprint of a vehicle is defined by the EPA as the car's wheelbase, or the length of distance between the front wheels and the back wheels, times its track width, or the distance between the left driver's side wheel and the passenger right side wheel. And so this rectangle is considered the vehicle's footprint. And automakers have to meet kind of a sliding scale target given a particular vehicle's footprint. And then an automaker's average is then calculated as the sales weighted average of all of its vehicle footprints. So let's say we have an automaker that sells a truck and a car, and the truck is longer than the car. And we have another automaker that sells a similarly sized car and truck. Each automaker's target that they have to meet is going to differ based on the relative sales mix of the car and the truck. And so this new approach of computing where your fuel economy needs to be based on the footprint has had some consequences for the car business. And so we'll come back to this and we'll talk about what effects this has had on the business. But also, in addition, automakers also get credits if they come in above their average, and they can sell these credits to other automakers to meet their averages to avoid penalties. So in the previous example, if we had two automakers and the first automaker was well above their target and the second automaker was well below their target, instead of paying the EPA a penalty, the automaker number two can go to automaker number one and say, hey, I'd like to buy your extra credits for fuel economy standards. And so once automakers have the credits, they can choose whether to keep them to offset future shortfalls over the next 5 years or sell them to make money. And in addition, for cars that run on alternative fuels, so these are cars that run on electricity or hydrogen, there's a formula to adjust the energy efficiency of these cars that incentivizes the development of these alternative fuel vehicles. So basically, even though an electric car consumes no gasoline, there is a formula that takes the electricity consumption of the car and converts it to an equivalent miles per gallon number. And the formula is constructed in a way where you're heavily incentivized to develop these cars. So that's part of why the number that we see on the windshield and the actual fuel economy that we get from driving our cars is very different than these targets, because these targets have a lot of other goals embedded in them and mechanisms to encourage automakers to do certain things and to award extra credit. So when we see a headline that says 52 miles per gallon fleet-wide average, that probably includes a fair bit of these extra credits from electric vehicles or flexible fuel vehicles or hydrogen cars. So there's all sorts of different ways that automakers can use to hit their targets based on their vehicle footprints. And now it's time for a short break. We'll hear from our sponsors and we'll share some information about how to submit a listener question. This week on the podcast, we welcome a new sponsor, Additional Dealer Markups. Additional Dealer Markups are the preferred tool for dealerships to correctly allocate vehicles to buyers with the greatest need during times of vehicle shortages, like right now. Additional Dealer Markups are a great tool that require little investment by the dealer and create a lot of profit for the dealer. So, Additional Dealer Markups, the tool to help allocate cars when supplies are constrained. Contact your local dealer today to talk about Additional Dealer Markups. If you have a question that you want answered on the show, write us an email at companycarspodcast@gmail.com. So what are the politics surrounding CAFE? So since CAFE was introduced by Congress, there's definitely a political element to these standards. And at adoption, CAFE standards were fairly bipartisan, and there was a mutually agreed goal that we should reduce our dependence on foreign oil through improving the fuel efficiency of the cars that we drive in this country. But over the years, as CAFE standards have broadened in their goals to include combating global warming and encouraging domestic production of cars, these standards have become increasingly political, with one group of politicians opposed to increasing fuel economy standards and one group of politicians staunchly interested in this policy tool to reduce energy consumption. And so it's important to note that as recently as 2007, passage of more stringent CAFE standards was a fairly bipartisan topic and not something that you would see in the news outside of either automotive circles or policy circles. And it was with the Obama and Trump administrations where these standards became really political. So where we start things off is the Obama administration announced that they had agreed with the automakers to increase CAFE standards to 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025. But then President Trump was elected in 2016, and he chose to roll back some of the steep increases in fuel efficiency beginning in 2020. And now that we've elected the Biden administration, he has plans to undo some of these Trump administration rollbacks to bring the standards closer to the original Obama-era goals. So if you'll remember from the start, we talked about the headlines that said that the administration wants to increase our fuel economy standards to 52.5. But you'll note that that is still slightly less than what the Obama administration had agreed to with the automakers of 54.5 miles per gallon. So we're moving closer, back to the original standards during the Obama era, but we've kind of had this ping-ponging along the way. So all this political ping-ponging creates a lot of headaches for the automakers, because the automakers need to plan their product portfolios and their cadences years in advance. And if they don't have the policy certainty to know what goal they should be hitting for their fleet, then it makes adjusting their product portfolio that much riskier, because you don't know if your ultimate portfolio will come above or below where you need to be. And as the years passed, automakers have shifted from fighting increases in the standards to just wanting clarity on where the standards are going to be, whatever they're going to be. Because as the years have gone by, the US standards are less influential on automakers' product decisions when they're thinking about what cars to design for the whole globe, because other regulatory regimes like China and the EU are definitely getting more strict. So there is less uncertainty over where the standards are going in China and the EU compared to the US. And so the US standards, some automakers are just saying, well, we'll just engineer for the EU standards and then we'll adapt them for the US standards later, whatever they may be. So this political footballing and ping-ponging is starting to matter less, because the answers to meet the new standards across the globe are pretty similar in the approach. So the US standards are becoming less influential on automakers' product decisions. The other big development in CAFE standards over the years has been the harmonization of standards within the US. And so until very recently, we have had two sets of standards in the US. So we have one for the country as a whole, and then California has a specific carve out where they are allowed to set their own standards because of some air quality issues they faced in the 1970s. And so they have been operating under this agreement with the EPA where they can set their own emission standards and fuel economy standards. So along the way, this has led to things like California having their own electric vehicle sales mandate back in the 1990s, and that didn't work out. But one thing that the automakers have wanted for many years is one harmonized standard between California and the rest of the country. And that was part of the Obama administration's agreement with the automakers, was that we would have much stricter standards, but those standards were expected to be harmonized between California and the rest of the US. And what happened was then the Trump administration said they wanted to roll back the targets, and California did not want to roll back the targets. And so the Trump administration threatened to take away California's authority to set their own fuel efficiency standards. And that created even further uncertainty, because not only did automakers not know where the target was, they ran the risk of once again facing two different targets within the same country. And by this point in 2015 or 2016, California was not the only state that followed California's standards. And so over the years, states were given the choice of either following the national standard or following the stricter California standard. So several New England states actually adopted the California standards for vehicle emissions and fuel economy in their states. So that's one other thing to think about, is that the uncertainty between possibly having two standards again really drove automakers nuts during the 2010s. But it seems like things are stabilizing a little bit now, and that we are likely to have one national standard. But that is still a little bit unknown, and we'll see where the next few years go, particularly the next election, where if things change, we may see a different set of policy goals in the White House. So how is CAFE calculated? Well, I'm not a mathematician, and so I'm just going to read verbatim what Wikipedia says is how the formula is calculated, because it gets very technical very fast from a math perspective, at least for someone like me. So CAFE today is computed as a harmonic average, and specifically this is the reciprocal of the average of the reciprocal values, whatever that means. And so for electric and alternative fuel vehicles, there is an adjustment formula that converts each alternative fuel car's energy consumption into a miles per gallon equivalent, or MPGE. And in addition, each automaker's specific targets are going to be a function of the vehicle footprint it sells and the sales distribution amongst that footprint. And so each automaker has a slightly different target based on the footprints of the cars they sell. So the important thing to keep in mind here is the automaker doesn't need to meet the individual model level targets, just the overall average across all of their products. So for example, if I am an automaker and I sell car one and truck one, and the truck gets really good gas mileage and my car gets really terrible gas mileage, that's okay as long as the average meets the fleet-wide target that's computed based on the sales-weighted percentage of those two products. And so meeting the target is pretty complicated, and the reason why CAFE values are different from what you see on the window sticker when you go to buy a car is that the two numbers are actually computed differently with different formulas. So just because automakers have this 54.5 or 52.5 miles per gallon target in a certain year doesn't mean you'll actually get 54.5 miles per gallon, because that 52 or 54 number that's the target has a lot of adjustment factors baked in. And the assumptions the EPA uses to report what's on the windshield is based on laboratory testing of the cars, but the numbers that the EPA uses for regulatory purposes is computed completely differently and is not based on laboratory testing at all. So the other thing to keep in mind is what the EPA achieves during laboratory testing of a car is different than what you'll see when you drive the car in the real world, because real world conditions are not identical to what's used in the lab. So the window stickers also don't include adjustments and credits that automakers get. So things like flexible fuel vehicles that, or cars that can use ethanol or gas. But put together all in, what you see on the window sticker is usually about 20 to 25% lower than the CAFE number that's assigned to the same car. So what this means is 52 miles a gallon or 50 miles a gallon for CAFE purposes really means closer to like upper 30s or 40 miles per gallon in real world driving. And we're actually much closer to that than we think. If you think about, even though there aren't too many cars that can break 40 miles a gallon today, there are some cars that are close, and there's a decent number of cars that are in the mid to upper 30s. And remember, this is an average across the portfolio, and so you can have some super high efficiency cars and then some gas guzzling trucks as well. And so how are automakers affected by these standards? Automakers pay very close attention to these standards, and they're very well aware of what benchmark they need to hit. And every time the regulations get updated, they will think about their product and powertrain strategy for the next few years to see how far apart they are and or how close they are to hitting it. So sometimes to get closer to the targets, if they're behind, an automaker will stop selling a particular car, or they'll stop selling a particular configuration to meet the target. So these regulations directly affect the products that automakers choose to sell and what types of engines or motors they put in the car. And so one really good example of how the CAFE standards affect product decisions is by looking at compact pickup trucks. So this year we've seen the reintroduction of two compact pickup trucks in a segment that hasn't really existed for a long time. And so we've seen the introduction of the Ford Maverick and the Hyundai Santa Cruz. And if you think about a pickup truck, it's a long car, right? So it's got a lot of length, because you have to have a pickup bed and then you have a cab. And so up until now, under the footprint method, a pickup truck that's a compact pickup truck would still have like a decent sized footprint, but it wouldn't be a footprint as big as a full size pickup truck. And so it's because the footprint is smaller than a large pickup truck, but bigger than a car, that makes it very difficult in this segment to hit the target fuel economy you need. Because these pickup trucks are also going to be taller and heavier than a comparable compact sedan, but their footprint may not be that much bigger than a midsize sedan. And so if you think about a midsize sedan like a Honda Accord, it regularly gets 35, 36 miles per gallon on average. Whereas a Ford Maverick, which is about the same size from a footprint perspective as a Honda Accord, in 2011 or 2012, this would have been the then Ford Ranger. That footprint, similar footprint car, only got 17 or 18 miles a gallon at the time, because the Ranger had a V6 engine and it was designed to tow, whereas the Accord had four-cylinder engines and wasn't designed to tow. So with the reintroduction of the Ford Maverick and Hyundai Santa Cruz, we see these two automakers trying a new strategy to make a compact pickup truck that's also CAFE compliant. So both of these cars are going to be assigned a relatively high target fuel efficiency because of its footprint as a relatively small truck. And The footprint approach is part of the reason why most other automakers have either abandoned compact pickup trucks or never entered the space. But what Hyundai offers the Santa Cruz with 2 4-cylinder engines, and they've taken out a lot of weight in the truck and used a lot of fairly typical normal approaches to try to hit their target cafe number. Ford, however, in the Maverick, chose a very interesting approach, and so Ford chose to offer the Maverick as a hybrid that achieves 40 miles per gallon, and this is going to really help the average fuel economy for the truck as long as it's a healthy percentage of sales. So what Ford chose to do is to make the hybrid engine the base engine in the Maverick, because not everybody who buys a Maverick is going to want to tow 3 or 4,000 pounds, which is probably closer to what a traditional truck would tow. And so the hybrid just needs to be enough sales to pull up the Maverick's average fuel economy across all of its sales, so it doesn't drag down the rest of Ford's portfolio enough for light trucks. And because the hybrid can get almost 40 miles per gallon, selling 25, 30, 40% hybrids is what is going to allow Ford to be able to sell the Maverick at all. Because if they sold it with only the gasoline 4-cylinder turbo engine, which is the other engine choice you can get in the Maverick, and probably a more typical engine choice that most people in the car business would have guessed Ford would put in the car. But if they didn't sell the hybrid, the fuel efficiency of the 2-liter gas engine is not enough to make the Maverick viable as a product in terms of Ford's cafe standards. So the hybrid's fuel efficiency is what allows the car to come back in the game. And so this is why Ford is offering a hybrid model. Certainly, they also want to be able to advertise 40 miles a gallon, but they're selling this partly because they have to and not only because they want to. And this explains several elements of Ford's decisions with how they've packaged and priced the Maverick. So the base models are the hybrids, and note that the hybrid model only comes in front-wheel drive, so it doesn't come with a four-wheel drive version, because they want you to get the fancier, more expensive 2-liter gas engine version if you need four-wheel drive, and push you up in a category. But they want to make the hybrid attractive enough that some people will buy it, but it doesn't have to be everybody. So this is why the hybrid is only offered kind of in this front-wheel drive version. And yes, it's offered on every trim level, but Ford is prioritizing production of the 2-liter gas version ahead of the hybrid version, except for customer orders. So goes the rumor. So the hybrid is kind of like, it's there because they have to do it and they have to sell a certain number, but it's not the main focus of where they're going to put their efforts. But it's still really nice to see a hybrid pickup truck, and it's nice to see Ford selling a smaller pickup truck for people who maybe don't need the capabilities of a Ranger or an F-150. And the Maverick size and footprint is the reason for it getting a hybrid, and it's an explanation for why the smaller Bronco Sport or the Escape, the hybrid is a much more concentrated version of the is a much more concentrated mix of the product portfolio in the Escape, where it's only offered kind of in a couple trims, and it's also sold as a plug-in hybrid, and it's not offered in the Bronco Sport at all, because they didn't have to in those cars, because those cars, just the gas-only versions, were going to be fuel efficient enough to hit the targets for those two cars' footprints. And yes, the Escape and the Bronco Sport have smaller footprints, but I think they also get slightly better gas mileage when they both have the 2-liter turbo. But anyway, so the Ford Maverick Hybrid is a product of Ford thinking very deliberately about its cafe standards and how they're going to meet the standards and balance it out between all these F-150s they sell, all these Rangers they sell, and the removal of compact sedans from their lineup. So Ford used to sell a Focus and a Fiesta, and those are gone now, and those used to bring up Ford's average fuel economy quite a bit. So now that role will be played by the Maverick. And so that's going to wrap it up for us this week on this episode of Company Cars. Thank you for bearing with us as we were gone and I had to work on my day job. And so hopefully we'll have some more episodes for you soon. And of course, don't forget to email us if you have any questions. Of course, it takes a whole village to make a podcast, and so we want to make sure we give due credit to the individuals involved with making this podcast. Our chief technical advisor is Turn It Off and On, and our legal and strategy consultant is Bill Meemore. Finally, we're assisted by our product planner, Ada Trim, and our finance and insurance manager, Mark Up the Rates.